options. And then we'll have a nice conversation afterwards, and we'll finish off with a gourmet vegan dessert that you can take home with you. It's about 6 hours. It's only $300. It's going to help the station because you're going to get the premium immediately. The station's not providing it. I am. I'm doing it as a public service. I donate my time. And we all work together to help the station. Kathy?
That's right. The number is 212-209-2950. It's a pledge of $300 to support WBAI and have a wonderful evening with Gary Null. And it is dinner and a movie with Gary Null for that $300 pledge. Call 212-209-2950. We're about to go on to a different offer. So really now is the time to make that pledge of support. 212-209-2950. And remember how important this work is to you. And one of the things that really struck me as Gary was speaking is just how valuable the information that you receive from WBAI, from the Gary Null Show. It's information that can change your life, that can change the life of your family. We're looking at changing the way the world operates, learning how to survive in case of things going amiss. There are so many different ways that you can have an impact into the world through what you learn on WBAI. So make that pledge of $300 by calling 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. A $300 pledge of support for a most valuable evening with Gary Null, dinner and a movie, conversation, sharing, learning, exchanging, the experience of that you will really be able to hold within you for your whole lifetime. 212-209-2950. Make that pledge of support for WBAI. We have people standing by at the call center to receive your call, and we have a lot of information yet to share, and you don't want to miss that. So call right now and make your pledge of support for your dinner and a movie with Gary Null. 212-209-2950. You can honor that pledge with a check or money order. You can honor that pledge with your credit or debit cards. You can ask for an installment payment. All of that is available to you when you call 212-209-2950. But the greatest gift is this gift of an experience, a dinner with and a movie with Gary Null. It includes the dinner, the movie, the conversation, the environment of really exploring the creative aspects of New York. You have the dessert, which is always nice, at 212-209-2950. So technically, you can leave your wallet at home for this evening. Just be able to get there and go home again. You won't have to spend another cent. So that's a wonderful opportunity.
The cabs downtown, the meals, the gratuity, the movie, everything's taken care of. And yet, in spite of the expense, the station still makes a reasonable, makes a very reasonable profit that helps them. And remember, at the end of the day, we are struggling. This is, some I know listeners are aware of this, but the vast majority are not. The station's worth anywhere from $50 to $70 million. And they now have control of the national board. And there's absolute unmitigated chaos at the national board. They've had four executive directors in the last 4 months. They don't even have one slated now. There's no one overseeing it. People have quit at the national office. And yet there's a group out of Berkeley that's ramming through rules that would allow them to do anything they want to do, including getting rid of BAI, which they see, and we have the actual minutes of them saying, you know, what we could get for selling BAI. Let's sell BAI and put that money into helping the other stations, which means Berkeley and KPFK. So if we can get our expenses down with a new transmitter at about $15,000 to $20,000, which is in the process of being done now, if we can bring in some quality additional programming, if we can get some good people within management to help where we need that help, including a program director, if we can tighten up the whole fundraising process so that it's shorter, the idea would be to have 12 good people raising funds, and each one bringing in about the same amount and not repeating programs, meaning you play a fundraiser once, and that's what we did for all those decades I was on the station. You never heard it again. And matching quality premiums with the in alignment with the nature of the show that you're listening to, and getting the premiums out the door immediately, that is what we're in the effort of trying to have happen. And if we can do all that, then there's no justification for them to say, oh, you're a burden to us, we have to get rid of you. So we believe that BAI should have a vital future if we are given an opportunity to have that future. So that's what all of us are trying to do, so that we can have a vital future. And it starts by bringing in funds, because if we don't make the money, then three things are guaranteed to happen. The fund drives will go on endlessly. We'll lose more people, listeners, because of how long they go on. We won't be able to pay our bills. And then the national office will say, see, there, then we have to let them go. They're a burden. So that's the inevitability. That's why we're working hard now.
Right.
Everyone's working hard, so please help us so that we can come together and keep the station alive and vital. Thank you for listening. And we're going to take a brief 60-second break because we have another hour to go.
Mm-hmm, that's right. Stay tuned. Listening to WBAI Radio in New York City, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. WBAI is in Fund Drive at this time, and you can show your support by calling 212-209-2950 and make a pledge of support. You can also go online to give to WBAI.org, and that's using the number 2, give to WBAI.org. And we are sharing with you a special broadcast with Gary Null, and many of you are accustomed to hearing Gary Null at noon, but we wanted to give you an opportunity to connect during this hour with the incredible work and opportunities to make a difference within your own life and to be able to be responsible and informed about how to transform your health and maintain your health. And Gary now will be sharing with you a new offer in this hour.
Kathy, today we're going to offer a premium that is in perfect alignment with the program I've done for 38 years here on BAI, and that is we're looking at the virtual pandemic of diabetes in the United States. We have more people suffering from pre-diabetic conditions and diabetes and insulin resistance than ever before in our history. All told, it's close to 100 million Americans, or nearly one-third of all adults. We have overweight, high blood pressure, elevated cholesterol, depression, cancer, all of that is associated with diabetes. And so what we're offering is a book, No More Diabetes, that gives a comprehensive program of what to do for diabetes. And it shows you the high glycemic foods, the low glycemic foods. You want the low. You don't want the high because it'll spike your blood sugar. We want the nutrients that are known to help our pancreas, to help us with insulin resistance, to help with blood sugar. We list all the nutrients and herbs and botanicals. We want to show how easy it is to put together a healthy, healing diet. So we have the diet that will help break the cycle of craving sweets and then eating them, and suddenly your blood sugar goes up and you've created all forms of biochemical distress upon the body. The exercises, the de-stressing, all this is based on good quality science, testimonials of dozens and dozens of people who I've helped on individual protocols who now no longer have diabetes. They've either improved, but they're all off insulin, Their doctors took them off, and they're all living healthy lives. And their blood sugar is normal, and they've lost weight, and their heart is better, and their blood pressure is better, and their cholesterol and lipid profile is better, and their mood swings are much better. So all the things that benefit a person when they get healthy are in the book. But then we have a comprehensive documentary on diabetes with the best diabetes specialists I could find. I brought together and we filmed a documentary of their input. So you're getting a DVD, a documentary, and a book on diabetes, explaining it, showing you why it's an epidemic. It's an epidemic in the Latino community. It is one of the fastest growing illnesses and causes of death within Mexico, by the way.
Wow.
And it's right up the top, because you can't really distinguish if you're overweight, diabetes death and heart disease death, because one can cause the other. And you frequently find three or four different conditions in the same person. You'll find neuropathy. You'll find pain. You'll find inflammation in the joints, insomnia, high blood pressure, homocysteine levels that are high, which precipitate heart attacks. So this is the problem, and it's a big problem. So we're trying to show people how, if they're healthy, good. But if they know someone who is pre-diabetic, and if you're overweight, the probability is you're pre-diabetic. If you are overweight and have high blood pressure, the increasing chances of becoming full diabetic go up and up. Most people just don't check their blood sugar, so they're probably pre-diabetic or diabetic if they're in those conditions and don't even know it, and won't know until they have a heart attack or a stroke. So this is a life-saving premium. This is a life-enhancing premium. It's all based upon, as you'll see from the scientific references, quality scientific references at the end of every chapter. So everything I'm saying in the book is validated by good quality information. So that's our premium.
And it's a wonderful package. For your pledge of $125, you receive Gary Knowles' No More Diabetes, Preventing and Reversing Diabetes a Natural Way. There's a book and a DVD in this package. So you're able to sit and listen and learn, and you have the book as the support and to go deeper into your understanding of how you can transform your life. And I have to tell you, Gary, I have two brothers who are dealing with this issue, maybe three, all three. And it's very difficult, I find, when you want to try to share information with someone, because they look at me and say, well, what really do you know? And I know there's so many people out there who have family members, if not themselves, that they really want to have an impact on. And this is the way to do it, to really sit down with them and as a family, learn how to transform your life step by step. I was listening to some of the material on this DVD, and it's very, very powerful. It's very powerful.
Let's listen to some of the DVD now, mm-hmm. just so people can get an idea of what's on it. And this is just a sampling of what's on it.
Okay.
Now we're going to hear from Dr. Sabina Grotowski. Not only is she an internist, but she's also has a background in anti-aging medicine. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Gary. As an internist who I think has made the transition from traditional internal medicine to anti-aging, functional, and regenerative medicine, I realize more and more that prevention is the key to everything, and I don't think we're doing such a fantastic job of it. As someone once said, if in the beginning stages, a disease is very difficult to recognize and very easy to treat. In the end stages, it's pretty easy to recognize and very difficult to treat. We have little that we can offer patients. So starting with that premise, diabetes is a continuum. It's not one disease. It's a continuum that includes hypertension, that includes hyperlipidemia, decreased HDL, increased triglycerides, and of course abdominal obesity. And we cannot take type 2 diabetes and take it out of context. I have very few patients that I know who are thin type 2 diabetics. So I think we have to expand the way that we look, the way that we try to diagnose the disease, and the way that we try to prevent it. And if we don't look for something, we're never going to find it. Therefore, in anybody, I usually start by looking for any evidence of leaky gut syndrome. Leaky gut syndrome is extremely important because in this modern day and age, everyone is inundated with toxins. We're all poisoned with heavy metals, herbicides, pesticides, fried foods, stress levels, lack of sleep, adrenal fatigue, which all leads to leaky gut syndrome and dysbiosis. And as we know, 80% of our immunity is in the gut. So that's one of the first things that I would test for. The second thing is, of course, we look for thyroid issues. We look to see if someone is hypothyroid, but there's also type 2 hypothyroidism, which means that the receptors are blocked and you can have blood tests that are completely normal. And this stems from lack of nutrients, from lack of microelements. We look for hormone issues, male and female hormones, which are extremely important. We address the issues of adrenal fatigue, increased cortisol. Then we look for nutrient deficiencies. However, we can bombard the patient with all the nutrients in the world, but if we haven't fixed their leaky gut, we haven't addressed the issue of intestinal dysbiosis, candidiasis, lack of good bacteria, then we're never going to get anywhere as far as treating the patients with all the micronutrients in the world. It's good medicine. It's good prevention. And I think that's the way we have to start looking at patients. And that's the way we have to start treating patients and try to get away from our so-called standard of care.
Excellent information. Thank you very much. Just imagine how many different approaches there are to any condition. So this idea that in American medicine, the average physician should be looking at a single cause, a single type of treatment, that's archaic. You're seeing the integration of multiple concepts into one patient. Dr. Martin Feldman is assistant clinic professor of neurology at Mount Sinai Medical School in New York City. He is a board-certified neurologist, considered one of the leading holistic neurologists in America. He's published over 65 papers in peer-reviewed journals. And Dr. Feldman specializes in helping people who have blood sugar imbalances, including a lot of diabetics and hypoglycemics. Nice to have you with us, Marty.
Thank you, Gary. There's an epidemic in America of hypoglycemia, not only diabetes, but also hypoglycemia, meaning glucose is low, hypo-low glycemia glucose. The problem is that it's episodic. The body has a thermostat which controls the glucose minute by minute, and the glucose has to be maintained at a certain level. If the glucose level falls too much or goes down rapidly, the brain is affected because the major fuel of the brain is glucose. That glucose level can cause episodic symptoms, meaning you get a symptom, it comes for a while. Many people learn if they eat a little bit, the symptom goes away, or they may in time just see the symptom abates and occurs again and again. The episodic is the key word because it comes and it goes. And therefore, most physicians will not be able to test it properly. Glucose levels are an important issue, but the glucose level usually is just of one moment when the needle goes into the arm and gets out some blood. The glucose is taken at that moment. But that moment, the glucose is commonly okay. So the patient has to understand they have to diagnose themselves partially. And how do they do that? Well, they commonly will learn to carry around food or to, when they feel badly enough, go and eat something. They tend to crave carbohydrate. But the key is the symptom also tends to be brain-related, such as episodic headache, dizziness that's episodic, brain fog that's episodic, concentration falters. Also, the need to have caffeine commonly is part of that. For example, the British, they've learned to have tea time. Tea time is usually about 3 o'clock, 3:30. They eat lunch maybe 1 o'clock. So 2-3 hours later, glucose may be down. They take tea, which has caffeine, brings the glucose back up. They've solved the problem for that moment. Many people also have been told that, well, the thing to do for hypoglycemia is to take frequent small meals with protein. That does help a great deal, but it doesn't fix the problem. And this is the problem. is an internal thermostat, and it is composed of the following. The pancreas, we've all heard about insulin. Pancreas is key. Pancreas has insulin and glucagon. The adrenals have glucocorticoids, which tend to harmonize glucose levels, and the liver has glycogen. We have to go back and rebalance the thermostat. Pancreas tends to like the following nutrients very, very, very much. Chromium, you may have to have a higher dose. 200 micrograms is a beginning dose. You may have to go double that, even triple that. Chromium, picolinate, or other types of chromium are very effective. They're inexpensive. They're very safe to take. They do the job very, very well. Next is zinc. Zinc is a simple mineral, inexpensive. Again, there are many forms of zinc. There's a chelate, there's picolinate, there's many forms of good zinc. You may have to start at 20 milligrams, may have to go to 40 or even 60. Next would be manganese, not magnesium, but manganese commonly does help. 10 milligrams or even more to help the pancreas to rebalance. B-complex, 50 milligrams per tablet or more, 3 or 4 times a day. Next would be the adrenals. If the adrenals are not working properly, the glucose level of the thermostat is not working optimally. Adrenals are a little more complex, but it's very, very treatable. First would be diagnosis. DHEA-S is a very good, simple blood test for adrenal function. If the adrenals are low or weak, that DHEA-S will be low. Cortisol may be part of adrenal, we'll call it resistance or adrenal weakness. Cortisol can be tested, especially the morning level is when the cortisol is highest in the body. One more test would be Raglan blood pressure test. Take the resting blood pressure horizontal. You wait a few minutes. Then you rapidly stand up and you take the blood pressure again immediately upon arising, standing up. In the normal adrenal function person, that level of blood pressure, the systolic, the higher number, if it's like 110 over 80, systolic is the 110, the higher number is the systolic. As you go from horizontal to vertical, the brain has to be fueled by the blood with the glucose in it to pump against gravity, so the blood pressure has to actually go up. The systolic has to rise. In people with low adrenal function, it may stay the same, or commonly it even falls. The systolic falls. It may even get a little bit dizzy at the time, and it takes them a while to get the adrenal back on track. Adrenal needs work. What do we do to get the adrenal back on track? Vitamin C, very important for adrenal function. Pantothenic acid, rhodiola herb, homeopathic sarcode, even glandular adrenal. Next would be what do we do about the liver. The liver has stored glycogen, which it releases to help to normalize blood sugar. You could test liver meridian. It's a little bit complex. You'd have to have an acupuncturist or someone knowledgeable on how to test acupuncture meridians. That liver meridian will be weak way, way before the blood test shows it. Liver can be rebalanced. First off, digestion was just mentioned very heavily. In terms of testing for digestion, in terms of leaky gut, in terms of getting digestion back on track. The liver loves to get the digestion back on track because the liver has to really receive all of the bad stuff from a faulty leaky gut and throws liver off balance. So digestion is number one. Milk thistle would be an herb for the liver. There are many, many other herbs for the liver. Detoxification is critical to get the liver back on balance. So we have to go back to the thermostat. Now, why do we care about this? It's just annoyance. Is that the case? Do what you got to do to just control it. This is the key. It is a early, early sign that if you do nothing over, it may take years, may take 2, 3, 4, 5 years. You maintain hypoglycemic for many years, you're going to become diabetic. I've seen this hundreds of patients. Conversely, even when you're diabetic, you should consider the thermostat. Everyone focuses so much just on the pancreatic insulin, they don't look at the adrenal much and the liver much. But for total, we'll call it holistic treatment of diabetes and pre-diabetes, which is hypoglycemia, you have to consider the thermostat. You got to repair the thermostat.
And that was a clip from this premium that we're offering you right now, Gary Knowles, No More Diabetes, Preventing and Reversing Diabetes the Natural Way. And you can receive the package of book and DVD for your pledge of $125 when you call 212 212- 209-2950. And this is a savings over the individual item, which you can receive for your pledge of $75 when you call 212-209-2950 to show your support for WBAI Radio and for the work of Gary Null. Gary?
As you can see, this is a very serious issue, and I brought people in who can give really good information. I mean, there's no mincing of words. We're a very sick society, and we need to come to grips with what's causing this and how we can prevent it, how we can improve it, how we can reverse it. And it's no pill. There's no magic pills. There's no magic formula that's going to do it. And it takes time. It takes effort. But we can make a difference. Let me give you a little story here. 5 years ago, I did a health support group, a brain health support group of people in this audience, and it was relatively straightforward. You had to have had a medical condition under medical treatment and have a letter from your neurologist showing what kind of problem that you have, how long you've had it, how severe it was, the fact that it was not getting better. We had a little over 70 people who ended up Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis. We had a full range, myasthenia gravis. Thank conditions that are not reversible in the United States. And no medicines are really going to work on any of these to reverse the conditions. But over a period of 16 months, meeting with people on a regular basis, we were able to completely reverse an advanced Alzheimer's and a multiple sclerosis, totally reversed it. In fact, one of these fellows, his name is Kenny. He's a plumber from New Jersey. He couldn't even walk unattended up the steps the first meeting we had, and we filmed everything. Even though it's not, none of my studies are medical, we always have a board-certified physician in attendance just to observe. And I hold very strong criteria that this is purely lifestyle and behavior modification. It is not about a medicine. So in any case, and people continue to go to their doctors, etc. In any case, I helped him up, and he didn't think he was actually going to turn around as having his wife take him home. And he said when we got everyone up the first day, he said that he decided to come when he had gone to two neurologists that had been treating him, and they said, "You now must prepare yourself for the next stage." And he said, "What's that?" He said, "You have to put ramps all around your house, and because now you'll lose more muscle coordination and strength. So you'll have to have ramps, in effect, these walking ramps around your house so you don't fall." And he said, "And what's the next stage?" They said, "Well, the next stage is you'll be confined to bed, and that's it, until you pass." Today, he is completely well. His neurologist did not understand what happened in the 16 months. They didn't ask him what happened. All they said is, "We can find no symptoms of your previous condition of multiple sclerosis. You have completely normal remyelinization of the myelin sheath. You have nothing we can find in neurological examinations that are a problem."
Wow.
And now, I don't give you that as an extreme, because it's not an extreme. We had a woman in that same study group. She was a professor at New York University. She is a supporter of BAI, and she had advanced Alzheimer's. She couldn't feed herself. She couldn't attend to herself, and she couldn't walk out of her house because she wouldn't remember to walk back in. She couldn't go buy anything because she didn't know the value of money. She had no concept of these basic functional skills. She had no cognition. She was professor of history of art, and she would lead demonstrations to museums and show them in great detail discussions about the artist, the artwork. And she couldn't do anything except see color. That's all she could do at this point. Nothing made sense. She couldn't read. Today, she is normal. She has made incredible progress. Incredible progress. So much progress that 2 years ago, I invited her to attend a conference, medical scientific conference of about 5,000 scientists in Washington, D.C., where I was one of the keynote presenters. And she got up and talked to this group to show them what was possible. They were looking for the magic drug. She said, this isn't any miracle. This was no, you know, nutrient or food. This was a lot of work for 16 months, but this is the outcome.
Wow.
She has her life back. She reads, she takes people on tours, and she motivates hundreds of people about what other options there are. And there were others. There was a person that reversed from full autism, where he hadn't spoken a word in 14 years, to being number one in his class at a major private school in Manhattan and living a normal life today. And his parents were there also, both New York City police officers. So the idea is we have a lot of people from a lot of different backgrounds who have made major improvements when they made changes that the normal medical paradigm doesn't consider significant. And we do.
That's so very powerful, Gary, yeah.
And then I was just invited 2 weeks ago by the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine to be one of the keynote speakers in December on a menopausal study group I did, where I was able in 287 women over a 12-month period to reverse over 90% of all their menopausal symptoms completely. Night sweats, hot flashes, thinning of the skin, falling of the hair, thinning of the eyebrows, weight gain, fatigue, urinary tract infections, drying of the mucous membrane of the vagina, developing loss of muscle mass, depression, all these we were able to improve in a very strictly controlled clinical study. So come this September, come just a month from now, when I return to the city, I will be conducting another health support lifestyle and behavior modification protocol for 3 months, meeting once a week for 3 hours for 3 months with diabetes and overweight, high blood pressure and cholesterol is all being measured. Again, it'll be medically supervised, but there will be no medicine and no medical treatment at all. But to get into it, a person must have a proof that they have some condition diagnosed by a physician. Otherwise, if we got you improved, how would we know that we got you improved from something you actually had? But if you have a medical test that, or letters from your doctor that you've been chronically overweight, or you've had diabetes, you have high blood pressure, elevated cholesterol, then you would qualify. Now, the person that you would have to speak with to get in and go through a qualification process, and I donate my time for free, as I do in all these 39 studies I've done over the last 30 years, you would have to speak with Lou Anne Panessi. She is the one who explains what you have to have if you want to be a part of it. So it's, once again, it's an opportunity for people to change their lives. Luann's phone number is 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. If you are overweight or have high blood pressure or are diabetic or have elevated cholesterol, any of those four gets you into the study. So that's coming up in just about 3.5 weeks. I'll be starting that, and then it'll go for 3 months. And that's how I'm able to do the work that shows the benefit. Now, if you remember, Kathy, a year and a half ago, I did the same thing with 200 people that showed an incredible change in arthritis in 28 days.
Mm-hmm.
That was a 28-day protocol. That was it. 28 days. But in 28 days, we were able to substantially reduce inflammation, swelling in people who had and been diagnosed and under treatment with arthritis for a long time. We made major improvements in those people. And we followed up for another year, and the people have continued to show improvement. So when people say, oh, that's not possible, oh, there's no science behind it, oh, it's all anecdotal, they're not aware of the 100,000 studies plus in the scientific literature quality studies showing that, what you eat, what you drink, your stress levels, toxins in the environment, electromagnetic pollution, all of this impacts your genes, what is called epigenetics. And by changing the energy, changing what goes into your system, you can change the outcome of disease. This is no longer theoretical. We no longer have to apologize for having been right on all of this for decades.
Mm.
We are helping to keep people healthy and alive who otherwise would be sick or dead for a long period of time. It's science is just catching up with us. Remember when no one thought fiber was important? But we did, and
yeah.
No one thought vitamin C was important. Over 30,000 studies on vitamin C alone, over 35,000 studies on vitamin E alone. So the studies are there, the science is there, and we just don't have a national educational program, and we can't. Quite simply, we can't have the Surgeon General, we can't have the head of the U.S. Public Services, Health Services coming forward and saying, here are foods you shouldn't eat and why. And here's foods you should eat, and why? Because every one of those foods you shouldn't eat, the sugar, high fructose corn syrup, the fried foods that are that end up causing cancer, the animal proteins that cause cancer, you can't have those industries, which are $100 billion industries, the meat industry, the egg industry, the dairy industry, the pesticide industry, the GMO corn and soybean industries, pork industry, you can't have those, the truth of them, come forward or it would wreck the industry.
And that's so true, and that's why this radio station is so vital and so valuable, because we don't depend on that. And we're able to, through programs, the Gary Null Show and many programs, give real, powerful, life-changing information that is truthful and not tainted by that corporate dollar. And this is why I am really hoping that people will make that pledge of support today.
Well, look at it this way. Why don't people simply be objective, not react, but use reason, and look at all the major issues that BAI has supported over the last 30 years? Just use 30 years as an arbitrary number. How many have we been right? My program did 15 programs on why we shouldn't invade Iraq. We were right, they were wrong. Others who also advocated that we shouldn't invade Iraq were right, and all the mainstream media, all the so-called experts were wrong. We advocated that we shouldn't be spraying DDT, and I helped lead the efforts that was started by Rachel Carson, the greatest environmentalist in history, on stopping and banning DDT. We were right. They were wrong. We said we shouldn't invade Vietnam. I was writing editorials against the war. Now, just yesterday, Kathy, on C-SPAN, they finally released the documents and the voice of Lyndon Johnson and McNamara conspiring to hide the fact that the Gulf of Tonkin incident did not happen the way they said it did.
Wow.
It was a lie. Now, mind you, the head of the National Archive was the person being interviewed on C-SPAN. It's up on my website. If you go to GaryNull.com or blog.GaryNull.com, that's where all the thousands of articles and everything else is, you'll be able to watch this. It's only about a five-minute piece. But in that five-minute piece, Kathy, he said that the head of the archives, all right, the top man in America in the archives, he's the one who validates the truth. His group of researchers, the National Archives, did the research, and they said, as politely as he can, that this was all a lie. Lyndon Johnson lied. We got into Vietnam and all. What he didn't talk about was the 2.5 million Vietnamese who died, the deadly legacy of Agent Orange, all of the neocons using the model of Vietnam in Iraq, in Afghanistan. But at least now we have absolute irrefutable proof that everything that we were told about Vietnam was a lie. And we wouldn't have had that, but now it's official. Remember in the last hour I said there's only two truths in America and only one is allowed. The official truth is the only truth that's allowed. Everything else is dismissed or attacked. So your individual truths, your universal truth, spiritual truth, those are never considered as legitimate. Only long after the official truth has been debunked and degraded down to the series of self-interested lies, then we suddenly see the truth of what we were told. When John Brennan, the head of the CIA, said that we do not spy on members of Congress, that's ridiculous, and we never did this, then it was the President of the United States had to acknowledge, yes, we did torture, and yes, we did do all these bad things, and yes, Brennan did, his CIA did spy on members of Congress, but otherwise they're nice people.
Wow.
No, they're not nice people, but what organization did more to challenge the lack of legitimacy in the FBI, the CIA, the National Security State, the neocons? It was BAI. BAI led that. Was stronger or weaker, were my more dynamic or more subtle voices, we were the relevant voices. Our truths were not official truths, therefore they wouldn't be accepted and quoted as official, but ours lasted. So when they say they can't cure something, they're absolutely right, they can't. But when we say we can help someone, we're absolutely right, we have. So go back and look at all the major issues. We are leading the nation in challenging genetically modified organisms with the Seeds of Death documentary. By the way, if you Google right now, Kathy, if you Google Seeds of Death,
mm-hmm.
The film, just the film itself, what do you think the searches would be?
Well, it's hard to imagine what it might be. 100,000?
Well, that's a lot. But let's just Google right now. I'm sitting here at my computer,
uh-huh.
And I just put in here Seeds of Death, the documentary. 13,200,000 search results.
Wow.
And every one of them is for the film. All right? So we're challenging Monsanto. We're challenging genetically engineered foods. We're sharing at the grassroots level how to stop Monsanto and DuPont and Syngenta and Bayer from controlling our food supply. But that is a voice that's emanating from WBAI. We're helping lead the charge to stop the nuclear proliferation and close down nuclear power plants. We're challenging the scientific lack of veracity and honesty and efficacy and safety on vaccinations. So you look at the 20 most important public health issues going on in the world in the last 10 years. We have been an essential part of being a supporter of it or leading it with articles, documentaries, and broadcasts. So BAI is an essential voice, though we are not official and we don't want to be official. We don't want to be NPR. We don't want to be a propagandist like MSNBC. We want to be uniquely who we are. Well, we pay a price for that. We have a sacrifice to make as a station when we're that unique, that we want to share something that comes from a far more determined and far more compassionate, humane, and honest perspective than the mainstream that doesn't think at all in these terms. They just report what they're told, and if it bleeds, it leads. At BAI, we want to prevent the bleeding, and that's what we do. So when we have a documentary on No More Diabetes, when we have a book on No More Diabetes, when we have so many people that we've helped improve or reverse their diabetes, those are real people. So we stand in debate, we stand in challenge to the orthodox model of health care, and we also know that the truth will never emanate. In fact, a former Surgeon General of the United States that I debated on national television on PBS told me after the debate, "I'm glad that you said all that because I can't." That's what she told me.
Wow.
And at least she was honest in that she told me, you know, there's a whole lot of special interest groups that keep things from getting out. And when was the last time our Surgeon General told us about anything representing what we could do proactively to prevent disease? They haven't. When was the last time anyone told you about all the environmental toxins that can contribute to autism? They haven't. They just say it's genetic. Well, you can't have a genetic epidemic. It can't happen. But that's the lie that they tell. But they control the official truth of the television, radio, and the print. So in the school system, so their official truth prevails until people one day wake up and decide to look at an alternative truth. And lo and behold, there we have a difference of opinion. So we pride ourselves in holding to our individual positions in spite of the fact of being condemned and challenged and attacked by the official people who are the guardians of orthodoxy. So when you call in the station now and you say, yeah, I know someone, my mother has diabetes, my father's overweight, my sister, you know, has elevated blood pressure, hey, if you've got a program that can help them, that's a small price to pay for helping a person recover their health. Well, it's based upon good science, and there's a lot of experience behind it. So we have a documentary, and we have a book. Kathy?
That's right, and the number to call right now is 212-209-2950. This book and DVD package can be yours for a pledge of $125. And really, listen, I want you to hear what Gary shared with you right now. This is an opportunity for you to take the power back, for you to take the information and be able to transform your health by doing the work, by taking the steps, but the information is all here. You can take this information and you can change the way your body is reacting, because you're changing what you're putting into your body. You're understanding what nutrients you need to take. And when I listened to that clip, I heard Dr. Feldman talk about, you know, the involvement of the liver, the involvement of the pancreas, the way you have to detoxify, to look at the whole body, to look at the whole being. And that's what we're asking you to do. Make that pledge of support. 212-209-2950. Gary Knowles, No More Diabetes, Preventing and Reversing Diabetes the Natural Way. And this is truly an epidemic. I mean, when I could, just looking within my family group, just traveling through the city, I see so many people that are sick, that are overweight, that have the swelling in their arms and their legs, that have difficulty getting around. And it's all about understanding that we can take the power of our own lives, change what we do, change our behaviors, and with the education to really understand what is working for your body and what is harming your body. 212-209-2950 is your number to call. And this is really such an important program, because you're not just hearing Gary Know, who himself is, you know, a master at this work, but he brings in the research. He brings in the doctors. He brings in the physicians. And it's like having these private consultations and learning what you need to do, learning to understand how your body is functioning or dysfunctioning, and that allows you to progress, make those changes with that understanding. 212-209-2950. We are talking about preventing and reversing diabetes, and this is a massive conglomeration of issues. It's not just diabetes and pre-diabetes. It involves hypertension. It involves insulin resistance, inflammation in the body. And, you know, there are all these things that you can look at, and you begin to transform these issues one by one by understanding what's contributing to it and what foods, what nutrients, and what behaviors you can engage in to prevent that from happening or to reverse it. And this is really critical, because the way I see it, the way I've seen it, is that when people go full into the disease, the doctors, as Gary described, just say, oh, well, the next stage is this. Now it's time to take insulin. Oh, your liver's gone. Now it's time that you need to go into dialysis. Oh, wow, that's not working. Now it's time to start amputating your feet and your arms and your fingers. It's a progression, if not dealt with, that is horrific for us.
We can reverse so many cases. We can save limbs. We know about bed sores and how to prevent the 80,000 Americans who died in 1 year from dying of bed sores, skin ulcers. There's so many things that we can do, but you can't do it if you don't have the tools to do it. These are the tools, the book and the documentary. Kathy, let's play the last segment, not the last segment, but the last segment of the documentary for today, so people can get some additional insight.
Okay, let's do that.
And then my program. program follows at noon.
Why do we make poor choices? How do we get to the place that we're at? It's not just some type of a surprise that happens out of night. It's a long series of permission-granting acts that you've allowed yourself to get to the position that we're oftentimes in. The majority of people that we're talking about have type 2 diabetes. We've worked our way into this situation. Our society is based off of fast food. The reality is that we are eating ourselves into this situation. Our sedentary lifestyles have led to this. It's a number of factors that contribute to it. And clearly, we want to be proactive about it. So why do people end up giving themselves permission to do these types of behaviors? You have to look at it in terms of we're the best and the worst of what we're exposed to. Our own background, the childhood experiences we have, what we're taught. We used to have families that would bring their infants into our waiting room, and they would be feeding them French fries as their meal. We had children who weren't engaging in any behaviors besides playing video games. If you lead a sedentary lifestyle, your brain shuts down, your body shuts down, there's no level of motivation. So we want to be able to address what are these issues. Well, we kind of talk about it with permission, denial. There are 16 forms of denial, but I don't want to have to go all of them. But we heard some, giving yourself permission. Well, what happens there? You justify your behavior. You give yourself rationalizations, excuses, alibis for why you deserve this. Each one of these opportunities that you talk yourself into leads to an unhealthy cycle. These cycles are oftentimes referred to as compulsive behaviors. When we look at these compulsive behaviors, what we end up seeing is an individual who is probably trying to do their best, get through life, and then some stressor takes place, some emotional strain. We have individuals who have some type of perceived stress in their life, and that's what it is. It's a perception. To one individual, that same situation may not be stressful, but to this individual, it is stressful. So they have this emotional reaction that causes them to have a thought, and the thought is, what do I do? A coping skill. Now that's where we come into it, through counseling therapy, working with all the providers up here. We can learn new ways to deal with these difficult situations. We want to be able to figure out, when is someone at a point of change? There's a model called the Stages of Change model. It has 5 steps. Let me walk you through it and take a look at where you're at or where your loved one's at. The first stage in the Stages of Change is pre-contemplative. That means either I'm not thinking about it, I may be ignorant to it, unaware. The doctor might say, listen, you're morbidly obese, you eat poorly, you don't exercise, you have a family history of this condition. You might want to consider changing this. And that person might say, gosh, I didn't know that. Pre-contemplative, unknown. It could also be, no, I'm going to do whatever I want. It's the democratic disease model. I can do whatever I want to my body, and you're not going to tell me anything about it. Hyper-resistant individual, pre-contemplative. People can only move one stage at a time. We know that from the research, we can jam people in the best practice models of interventions. Those individuals who fail are struggling because they're not at a point of being ready. So they go from pre-contemplative to a contemplative phase, where they're thinking about what's best for them. They're weighing it out, the pros and cons. They're being able to figure out what is the best outcome for them, what's the worst, if they take action, if they don't take action. And once you work through weighing out the scale, you come to the point where you've made a decision. I need to do something different. And I'm saying that's why you're all watching right now. You get to the preparation phase. And the preparation phase is you get your ducks in a row. You make sure that you have friends and family that support you. You clean out the refrigerator, the bad foods. You make sure you do all the healthy things you're supposed to. But you haven't changed yet. All the people who fail in treatment, when we assess them in terms of stages of change and readiness, 40% of them are pre-contemplative, 40% are in the contemplative, and 20% are in the preparation phase. Because they haven't been moved to the point of action. Once you're in the action phase, and each one of you out there are at this point where you're thinking, I got to do something different. My loved one needs to do something different. At this point, you're doing all the behaviors. But yet, people relapse. And we know that. Change is difficult. So finally, after a couple of months of doing the right thing, we get into the maintenance phase. And the maintenance phase is where it becomes part of a lifestyle. What we're talking about is our society. We have a systemic problem. We have contributed to our own problems, and we have to take a proactive stance. We can't passively wait for people to do things for us. You and your loved ones, by watching the show, clearly are taking that stance, and I hope that you take all the information that we're sharing with you today and apply it to your life.
I'd like to just slightly expand the perspective on stress. Stress is a factor in most illnesses. What's stress? Stress is any change that's happening inside us or around us, and it is happening constantly. We're usually not aware of it because our stress response system is so effective. What we don't realize is our stress response system is turned on most of the time, even while we're asleep and dreaming. And we don't know how to turn it down and turn up the recharging system. And the stress response system, when it's turned on and goes on more than it's needed, which is most of the time, it creates a lot of inflammation and stress hormones, and it burns a lot of energy. So what do we often do is we put food in, a source of energy. Carbs are quick energy. Fat is high quality.
And you've been listening to an audio clip from the premium we're offering you today, Preventing and Reversing Diabetes the Natural Way. And Gary will be back in just a few moments with the Gary Noel Show at noon. But I want to give you these last few moments to make your phone call 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. A pledge of $125 to support WBAI. And you'll receive as your gift No More Diabetes, Preventing Reversing Diabetes the Natural Way. It's a book and a DVD package. No More Diabetes. Gary Noel's No More Diabetes. Call 212-209-2950. I know that Gary Noel has to make that transition to the noon program.
In about a minute, I'll be on BAI Live with my noon show. Going to have an interesting debate today on the Gaza crisis with the head of the Zionist Association of Israel, and Max Blumenthal. So you might not want to miss that. Plus, I have a scholar in residence who is not affiliated either way on the Israeli conflict, who has done a historical, honest, accurate analysis to see what is the truth that is being missed. So that is happening today on the show. Plus, of course, I always start with the latest on health and healing. So we have a dynamite show following this one today. But right now is your last few moments to realize the significance of having resources. Think of it like this. Let's say that you've lived a reasonably healthy life. You've made reasonably healthy choices. But you know someone who has not. They didn't really think that health was that important till they got the diagnosis. And then suddenly it just overwhelms everything else in their life.
Right.
So if you have a book, if you have a documentary, you can sit, this is a long documentary, but you could sit with that person and watch it, and suddenly a whole new sense of optimism and hope opens itself up. And all healing starts with hope. It starts with taking your emphasis upon disease and suffering and finality, mortality, to one of, maybe there's a way for me to get out of this. Maybe I can reverse this. And that's what I have spent my 38 years on BAI doing, providing
Absolutely.
Solutions to the problems wherever possible. Now, not everything works. That's unreasonable to even suggest that. But we've helped so many people, and I've gotten so much feedback from this audience, plus my ABC Network audience for 12 years, EVD for another 12 years. So I, you know, when you get a million people showing you that stuff works, you know that it works. And then the science catches up and validates that what you were suggesting worked.
And you're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org. And the pledge line is 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. And you just have a few more moments. And, you know, when you hear what the work that Gary Noel is doing, I know that you support that. When you hear about the work that WBAI has done and is doing, I know you want to support that. And here is an opportunity for you not only to support the radio station, but for you to make a transformative change within your own life, within the life of your loved ones. That's Gary Noel's No More Diabetes, Preventing and Reversing Diabetes the Natural Way. It's a pledge of $125 when you call 212-209-2950. We need for you to get on the phone right now. We just have moments left of this morning's program, and you can support this, the work of Gary Noel, and your own life transformation. It's the changes that you make that bring power to your life. 212-209-2950 is your number to call. We have just moments. Please make that phone call, 212-209-2950. No more diabetes. No More Diabetes. It's a book and a DVD for your pledge of $125. You can use MasterCard, Visa, American Express. You can have a check or money order. Any way you wish to honor that pledge, you can do it when you call 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950.
Georgia didn't feel just right. She had fever all day and chills at night. Now things got worse, yes, a serious bind. In times like this, it takes a man with a style like getting out of a vine. A doctor of the heart and a doctor of the mind. If you like country with a boogie,
tuned to listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, New York City, WBAI, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. And the preceding programs were brought to you on recording. Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. And for the second week in a row, we have to do a memoriam show, a show that this time will be recollections of my own, of Steve Post and Margot Adler. Stay tuned. Well, I am going to do the program that I mentioned on Steve and Margot. However, due to the 3.5-hour special that we did last week with Margot and various things coming up, we have put off some of the regular features of Hour of the Wolf. In fact, I've been hoping to expand some, but on Monday, when I heard about Steve Post having died on the previous day on Sunday, and I was and am still very, very deeply grieving the loss of Margot Adler, who's my closest friend for many years, I needed something to pick me up. I needed something that would get me out of the funk. And, in fact, something that my partner Barbara and I would often do with Margot would be to go to a blockbuster movie. Last one we went to was Gravity. This wasn't, you know, like every blockbuster movie that came out, but occasionally we would, especially if it was something that the three of us, and sometimes our friend formerly of WBAI and now at NPR, who I don't have her permission to name her, so I shan't do that. Sometimes the four of us would go. So we went to see, my partner and I went to see Guardians of the Galaxy. And I gotta tell you, it chased a lot of the blues away. Not that one shouldn't grieve, but one should also perhaps get some perspective. And even then, okay, before I get to, we're about to hear a movie review of this by Dan Persons, and this is a lead into it, but it also, one thought leads to another, and that's often what freeform radio is about, as exemplified by what Bob Fass and Marco Adler and Steve Post have, Larry Josephson, have all done on our air through the years. So we went to, years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, not long after Margot's husband, John Glideman, had died of stomach cancer, and pretty horribly, may I add. Margot and my partner and I, we all went to see Avatar, which was relatively new. It's probably been running about 3 or 4 weeks. And we either go to previews, to which we are invited and have reserved seats, or we wait until the crowds die down. And while admittedly Avatar is not a great movie, it's still a great roller coaster ride. It's a fabulous immersion, and the world that it portrayed was an important one for people who thought in a certain way of an ecological, matriarchal style universe. And that is very much what Avatar had to offer. And the technologies used in the making of that movie were quite something. And we sat there, and as the closing credits were rolling, Margot was sobbing. And it wasn't the sobbing of, oh, you know, this is the best movie I've ever seen. We had a good time, but what was it? And Margot said, if only John could have seen this. This is like just the kind of movie that we have always talked about in terms of what can science fiction cinema do. And it was both a sad thing that he would not see that film, and yet it was also a cathartic thing that we were able to take time off from the grieving. Obviously, Margot grieving more for her husband, who was a friend of Barbara's and mine, me since the mid to late 70s, but not with the same kind of intensity. But the point is, the catharsis was very important. And I went to see Guardians of the Galaxy on Monday with the news of Steve Post dying fresh in my mind, and the grieving of Margot, which is something that I don't know that I will ever get over. But the movie did provide an escape. It even though I thought of that time while sitting and watching Avatar with Margot, it was just fun. It was the best Marvel Studios movie from Disney that I've seen, certainly since the Avengers, no questions asked. And it just was silly. I don't remember the plot, if there was a plot. Here's the plot, okay? Spoiler coming. Everybody's after a MacGuffin. That's it. And before I play Dan Person's review, he doesn't mention something that I will mention. And that is, and you should probably already know this with any movie that comes out of Marvel, stay until the credits are over. Okay, that's all I will say. That and the fact that, no, Samuel Jackson isn't in it. It's even better than that. Okay, that's as far as I'm willing to take that. So before we get to the other things that I'm going to talk about this morning, here is our official Hour of the Wolf movie review from Dan Persons.
I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. There's a fairly amusing title card at the beginning of Guardians of the Galaxy that sets the time period for everything we're watching at the present day. What makes that amusing is that, save for a brief opening sequence, once that title card appears, we never see Earth again. The implication being that while we're going on with our constricted, humdrum lives here, all variety of aliens are bopping around the universe, rubbing elbows and doing crimes, and having all sorts of crazy adventures. Us humans, meanwhile, have not been invited to the party, so we may as well just sit back and enjoy the show. And just sit back and enjoy the show seems to be the prime operating philosophy of Guardians of the Galaxy. It's a hard truth of the comics publishing industry that it's a volume business. You don't just have your first-tier books. You're pushing out all kinds of stuff. For every Superman and Spider-Man and Wonder Woman, there's a Moth Guy and a Blue Mist and a Miracle Person. This holds true even in the digital age, by the way. It's a hard truth of the entertainment industry in general that once you've got a hold of a package of properties, you're seeking to capitalize on as much of it as you can. Makes you no money if it's sitting up on the shelf. Let's make a movie out of it and see where that goes. Since Disney has acquired Marvel, that philosophy has been in full force, to the point where the next big release out of the Disney animated division will also be a Marvel property, Big Hero 6. I think I've mentioned before that I don't have a particularly deep investment in the Marvel Universe. I don't know if Guardians of the Galaxy are good comic books, great comic books, mediocre comic books. Let's just presume they're not flat out bad, much as it sometimes seems like it. Hollywood wouldn't actually adapt something that's out and out bad, so let's just forget that part of it. I do know that prior to Disney announcing it was making a feature film out of Guardians of the Galaxy, I don't think I'd heard any mention of the series from comic book fans. It certainly didn't have the stature of a Spider-Man or a Thor. And God knows the plot of Guardians of the Galaxy, the movie, isn't blazing any new trails. There's a world-destroying widget that everybody is after, including our ragtag band of lovable rogues, and much mayhem ensues. Been there, done that. But this is a case of the journey being of more value than the destination. Guardians was directed and co-written by James Gunn, who's known mostly for his writing work, with varying results, but has an undeniable skill at adding an edgy sense of fun to his stories. I used the phrase lovable band of rogues just before, and that isn't just because it's a handy cliche. Gunn actually does make them lovable, whether it's Chris Pratt's treasure hunter Peter Quill, essentially the same adorable lunk he plays on Parks and Recreation, but tuned to hero mode, Zoe Saldana's haunted assassin Gamora, Dave Bautista's literally literal-minded Drax, or Bradley Cooper and Vin Diesel voicing the two CG members of the team, the dyspeptic Rocket Raccoon and the serene ambulatory tree Groot, respectively. The story isn't particularly elegantly told. I'm still not sure how all the bad guys relate to each other and who's actually in charge of them, but every time my eyes started glazing over, there'd be a clever little character bit or some genuinely cool CG visuals or a smartly staged action bit that revived my enthusiasm. What sums up Gunn's approach for me is a sequence where he pulls a variation on the old whatever you do, don't push that button bit, but stages it in a way that the audience discovers the gag on their own. It says a lot that he trusts people watching to pick up on what's going on. Plus, it's a lot of fun to sit in a theater and hear each little pocket of people break into laughter as they catch on to the gag. I'm looking at it this way. If Star Wars Episode 4 did not exist, Guardians of the Galaxy could have fit into that slot quite handily. Not the same plot, but it is the same outlook. Just a fun space adventure with a bit of emotional underpinning to give the characters some integrity. Good fun, and I'd be lying if I said I'm not looking forward to revisiting this universe for the next one. I'm Dan Persons. Remember, we are now archiving these reviews over at CineFantastique Online, so catch up on what you missed by going to cfqonline.com.
Thank you, Dan. Okay, so I had my say about that. I will add one more thing. I was astonished at the amount of cartoon violence in this movie. It did not trouble me at all, but it's like, yeah, there are cities blown up in films and that kind of thing. This one was like, wow. And also, by the way, potty mouths for a Disney film? Amazing. Okay. Let's set the Wayback Machine some 49, 50 years ago. And I would be, I guess, about 11 years old. So 49 years ago. And partly due to my uncle, who did two things for me. Number one is he influenced my reading a great deal to read science fiction. And number two is he turned me on to WBAI. And I tried different programs. I was a special fan of the PYP, Programs for Young People, which included the radio drama series called The Radio by, I guess I wasn't a Rapzang. That was David Rapkin and Charles Potter with music often by James Ursay. And there was Poisoned Arts, Janet Coleman and David Dozer, who are still on our air. And for late night, I couldn't and didn't listen, you know, stay up very, very late on weekdays. So I would only hear the beginning of Bob Fass's show. But weekends were mine. And weekends belonged to Steve Post, so far as I was concerned. Doing the radio program The Outside, I was not at that time familiar with his history, that he had been the bookkeeper at WBAI, and when Chris Albertson, who was doing a program, former station manager Chris Albertson, was doing a program called The Inside, was caused to leave WBAI. Post began a program called The Outside. And that's about the time that I began listening. As I say, I didn't know the history. And I was glued to that program for many reasons. For one thing, Post played music that I loved. He would play, well, where Fass was more into Dylan and Arlo Guthrie and all that stuff, nothing to put down there. It's all stuff that I love from my youth. Post was more into the more acoustic singer-songwriter types like Joni Mitchell. Well, Judy Collins was a stylist, but she was more of a folky than these other people were. These other people were breaking new ground. There's really no huge difference between the musics that Fass and Post had, other than Fass would for an equal amount of time, have the actual musicians in the studio, where Steve was as likely or more likely to be spinning discs, playing music. And there were rituals involving The Outside. Steve got prankier phone calls than Fass did. The Cabal, that call-up radio unnameable then and now, were of a different mindset, perhaps a little bit more political, perhaps a little bit woolier in terms of being happy hippies. And Posts were more of the prankster variety. Steve would often get phone calls from the Enema Lady, a woman who would call up and was clearly thoroughly obsessed. Was it a gag? Was it a put on? No, it was not. This was somebody who called up and would sing songs. Oh, have you had an enema? And things like that. Post had a style, a sardonic, sarcastic sense of humor. He decried how much he didn't necessarily enjoy what he was doing, and yet you knew that was not the case. He was having a ball. He was having a great time on the air. In those days, WBAI was not a 24-hour-a-day radio station. There would come the time that the transmitter would be turned off. The midnight person, who on weekends was Post and weekdays was Fast, would go at least till 3 o'clock. And depending on how they felt and what the momentum was, they might, you know, keep going until 5 or so. Even after we stopped being a station that turned off its transmitter, Bob Fass, who I often followed at 5 a.m., might very well, you know, be winding down at 5:15. Programs would flow into each other. But Post would begin the process of sign-off at 3 a.m. And he would add little touches to it that were very typical. Now, I'm doing a lot of this from memory, and I'll get the numbers wrong. This is not legal. I'm going to say blanks here and there to make sure you know this isn't any kind of thing. But it used to be WBAI. At this time, WBAI concludes another day of broadcasting. WBAI is owned and operated by Pacifica, a nonprofit educational institution operating stations in the New York, Los Angeles, Berkeley, and occasionally Houston areas. Okay, footnote right there. Occasionally Houston areas, yeah. KPFT's transmitter had been blown off the air twice, in fact. And at least one of those times, the way we did the fundraising drives. Now you hear nothing but nonstop fundraising drives for ourselves. And by the way, you do need to call that number, 212-209-2950, and make a pledge in the name of Steve Post or Margot Adler, or if you like, Hour of the Wolf. And the sidetracked myself. I do that all the time. So, and occasionally Houston areas. And he would go on. We operate on channel blankety blank with effective radiated power of 50,000 watts with 5.4, I think, kilowatts vertical and X number of watts horizontal, depending whether you're lying up or standing down. We thank you for listening and hope that today's programming has not discouraged you from tuning in at 7 a.m. when WBAI will return to the air with the In the Beginning and Larry Josephson. Now, I don't have the voice, okay? I have the memory of Post's voice, and it was something. There was, especially at the age I was at, it was its own cult. You know, Bob had his cabal, Steve had his cult. The moment he would begin to do sign-off, people who ever were around or arranged to be around would come into the master control room and try to slow down Post's turning the transmitter off. These people might very well typically include Marshall Efron, the great satirist, Paul Krasner, another satirist and publisher of The Realist, and another person who would frequently cross over into Radio Nameable. Charles Pitts, who was an engineer and programmer, of course, at WBAI, an historic programmer for gay programming and particular kinds of programs. And why am I not remembering the name of his show? Out of the Slough was Gary Fried's program. What was the name of Charles Pitts' show? Well, when I take phone calls, which I will do a little bit later and not too long from now, because I don't want this to be a 90-minute more dialogue. We're going to 3 a.m. Then you can call up and tell me. Don't bother now. I'm not taking calls yet. But Post would begin the process of sign-off at 3. Sometimes he got off the air as early as 4:15 or so. Sometimes not until 5. And there was the thrill, the tuning in for this ritual. And running gags that went for years of Post talking about head cheese and guava, Charles, that would be Charles Pitts and Post going back and forth. And all of these wonderful, wonderful little rituals. So it turns into 1967, May 1st, and WBAI is having its second ever fundraising drive. And those marathons, as they were called, rightfully so, began on May 1st and went for about a month. And the year's budget would be made in that 1 month, and you wouldn't hear on the air from us about money for a long time. And they asked for phone volunteers. So you better believe that late one Friday, no, Saturday night, I went to WBAI for the very first time on May 1st, 1967, or whatever the Saturday is, can look that up easily nowadays. But it was the Saturday of May, the first Saturday in May, 1967. I usually celebrate it as May 1st. It might be, it might not be, at any rate. The main reason I went there was I had to find out what Steve Post looked like. BAI was located in a small brownstone on 39th Street, East 39th Street, in the shadow of the roadway that comes off Grand Central. And the bathroom was a small, cramped place. And the news wires, the tickers, the teletype machines, were actually on a board over the bathtubs. Then there was one studio with a small control room looking in. And then there was the master control room, which had a window that was maybe, oh, like, you know, 1 foot square. And not being a tall person, if I went on tiptoe, I could look in there. And I did that. To see Steve Post. It was a life-changing moment for me. It was really thrilling. And thus, for me, personal history was made. Before I had been hooked listening to WBAI, now I was hooked being there. And I spent as much time as I could answering phones, which got me upstairs. And I think people were pretty put off by having this 13-year-old kid there and God knows what my behavior was and being underfoot and stuff like that. So I was given a job, the job of bouncer. Now, I think this was a real job, but it may have been created just to get me the heck off the third floor where the station was located and down into the foyer, where I would have a checklist of the names of people that worked at BAI and a phone. And if somebody would come in before they would get to the elevator or the stairs, I would check them off and let them pass or not. Like, what could I do if somebody came in and were not? This is sometime after the JDL had tried to occupy the station because of a radio program that Julius Lester had done. Great anecdote about that, but hopefully Paul Fisher will tell it sometime. It's really his to tell. And so forth. So Post comes in and, you know, I get a thrill. He talks to me. Now, he was fairly freaked out, I may say, by the fact that I was this face that looked in at the window and stared at him. I don't think he's very comfortable with the idea of fans. Not on that level. He could stand up at the Village Gaslight. The first BAI event that I attended was at the Gaslight. Dave Bromberg, Van Ronk, and the third person, it wasn't Patrick Sky, but somebody like that, somebody I don't recall right now. And Post was the host for this BAI benefit. At any rate, as I say, to me, this is all very heady and very thrilling. Post says, you know, be aware that the person coming in after me, he's been following me, and he's got problems. He thinks he's the station manager. Our station manager is a guy named Frank Millspawn. This guy is going to tell you that, you know, he's that person. Do not, under any circumstances, let him in. And Post went on upstairs. And then, you know, 2 minutes later, right behind him, fetching coffee that Post probably told him to pick up and bring in, came the station manager, Frank Millspawn, who I, of course, kept out. Well, I called upstairs, you know. Again, 13 years old. What was I going to do to keep him out? What's the point of the story? None, really. Sorry. Just recollecting. I did a lot of recollecting last week about Margot, and as long as Hour of the Wolf is on the air, program that she started, and that's the program that turned WBAI into a 24-hour-a-day station. It was that, as I said, we used to always sign off. And when Margot arranged in 1972 for Hour of the Wolf to begin, the explanation of how it began was broadcast last week in Margot's own voice. Now Steve and Bob had to go till 5 a.m. and Larry Josephson no longer got to turn on the transmitter, which must have been a thrill. He had to transition from Margot and or I on the days when Margot wasn't there. So, eventually, Post stopped doing The Outside, and he began his morning program, Room 101. And at that point, Margot had stopped doing Hour of the Wolf. She was doing Unstuck in Time. And I then had the thrill of being the person who preceded Post and doing the transition. And on some occasions, I would even fill in for him. There was one very snowy day when he just was not able to make it in. And there's a funny anecdote that, in fact, in the very few stories that I've written up for my Will I Ever Write Them memoirs, I tell that story. But I alluded last week to some stories that I cannot tell on the air, not because they are salacious or anything like that, but because they involve personal things in people's lives that have not been revealed on the air, and at this time, I'm not going to do it. But it's a doozy. It's a doozy. And the reason for the shows last week and this week are not just me venting and crying and memorializing these wonderful people, but also because these are both people that moved on from WBAI to, in Steve's case, first WBLS and then to WNYC / later on WQXR for his morning music program and his no-show show, since Steve was so often not on the air, several of which, by the way, I'm told, can be found online at the WNYC website. And, by the way, I'm terribly sad and sorry to say that I do not have any actuality of Steve talking. I will get some. I will have some for the future. And I'm going to acquire more of Margot Adler. But right now, all that I have is the stuff that is kept digitally. And we don't even have, is there even a cassette machine in this room up here at City College? No, there is not. So magnetic-based media are out, only digital here. But I will look to doing these things at any rate. Sidetracked myself again. Oh, yes. They moved on. They moved on to Margot, to NPR, and Steve to WNYC. People mistakenly confuse NYC and NPR. They are not the same thing. One is a program producer that is a part of the federal government and funded by the federal government, and the other was New York City's municipally owned radio station that Rudy Giuliani basically sold it to itself and formed the WNYC, formed New York Public Radio, which now also owns WQXR, and I believe some other stations as well. But I could be wrong about that. And in the New York Times and the New York Post, excuse me, not the Post, the Daily News, both of which did appropriate and lengthy obituaries of both Margot and Steve, they're mostly about NPR. Current magazine, current.org, which is the trade journal of non-commercial radio, had a wonderful remembrance of Steve Post, written by Larry Josephson. And the week before, I'm going to screw up his last name, so I won't say it. It's in my email. Did a wonderful piece about Adler. And the New York Times, they both remembered the roots at WBAI, but they did not necessarily go into any kind of detail about those times. Now, Margot was with BAI, on BAI, on a regular ongoing basis, from 1968 until about 1982 or 83, and even after that, she was occasionally doing programs. So she was as recently as 2 years ago, was on our air. And Post would come in occasionally, especially for the 40th anniversary of WBAI that we had in 2010. Margot was there too, of course. And Post would occasionally be on our air. Both of these people were so different on WBAI than the places that they became better known for. Margot on NPR, the reporter producing pieces for All Things Considered and turning in reports and being the, in essence, New York bureau chief of National Public Radio, was not the same Margot that did Hour of the Wolf or Unstuck in Time, that did these